Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hello, everybody.
And our special guest today is Dr. Dawson Cook. Dawson is a clinical psychologist and a researcher at Curtin University in Western Australia. He has been working with parents and particularly fathers for the past 15 years. He completed a clinical psychology doctorate on father-child relationships and now continues this research interest as a postdoc research fellow at Curtin University. Dawson, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, Dawson, you are the lead researcher on a new paper which has caught the attention of the media recently. Why do you think there is so much interest in the topic that you've chosen?
Well, it was fantastically timed to just be before Father's Day. Pure fluke, really. So that helped, I think. But, yeah, I think there's a huge change happening in our society, in most societies, about how much fathers are being involved, probably more so than being involved, though, how role is being valued and the expectations on fathers. So with that changing, everyone's watching and wondering how this is going to pan out because it's unfamiliar territory, a bit like how women have led the way into now being far more involved in the workforce and in broader society. Now fathers are moving into traditionally women's territory of being parents and being connected with their children more.
And obviously, yes, that creates a lot of interest for everyone to see the fathers taking on this this different role. Your paper is called Paternal and Maternal Reflective Functioning in the Western Australian Peel Child Health Study. So what do you actually mean by reflective functioning?
Yeah, this is a really exciting and different area of research that's come out probably only in the last 20, 30 years, which is relatively recent when you consider parenting, the idea of parenting. And it's really about how a parent connects with the thoughts and intentions and feelings of their child, as well as reflecting on their own. So it's not like it's a brand new area, though, that was never thought about. It's very much along the same lines of trying to understand empathy and mindfulness of the relationship between a parent and child. It's maybe a bit of a balancing up to what has traditionally been the focus, which has really been sort of, behavioural interventions or behavioural understanding. So what you do as a parent and how you do it, this is far more about who you are as a parent and what the relationship is like. And it's a very tricky thing to study, really. You know, when you try and describe a relationship, you suddenly get lost for words sometimes.
There's also a reference to mental states, and I think you describe mental states as being the thoughts, feelings, and intentions. So is that something that perhaps the mothers traditionally are expected to demonstrate, that they're empathising with their child?
Possibly. And this is where it's sort of unknown, really. That's why I want to do this study, to try and better understand how fathers are connecting in this way. We know that fathers are often quite physically involved, like there's a lot of hands-on understanding of how a father gets involved with his children. Dads like to play with their kids, they like to tickle their kids, and you know, dads are great when it comes to bathing or burping or walking their child. But what I was interested in is, well, what about when it comes to a dad really being in touch with how their child feels or what their child's trying to communicate in those early months or that first year before a child can say anything? There's still a lot of connection and communication that happens through the eyes, through the body language, and just sometimes just through the imagination. You're just trying to guess how your child might feel about something. That's an area that's, who's to say whether mothers or fathers do it better or not? There is a bit of indication that sometimes men have a little bit less capacity for empathy or for understanding emotions, but that can be a bit of a stereotype too. So it's something we should ask a serious question and try and assess and measure these more.
So the indications are that the dads can empathise well. They can. There's no reason why they can't empathise in the same way that the mothers have always done.
Agree that there's no, generally speaking, there's no reason to think why a father won't have as close, as good, as competent a relationship with their child. And attachment research, which I guess has a lot of similarities to what I've been looking at, which is about the relationship and about the connection or the bond between a parent and a child. Attachment research has shown that fathers are quite capable to form a secure connection and attachment with their child. This is a bit more of a nuanced measure, this reflective functioning, so we've been looking at it from a slightly different lens in that way. And I think the research did actually show that fathers were lower in some dimensions or some aspects, so they weren't quite as high as mothers. But the jury's still out because the measurements that we're using are still quite new, and they've mostly only been tested and developed with mothers. So maybe fathers do it in a slightly different way. Maybe fathers are as connected or are as understanding of their child, but we need to ask different questions. So it's sort of the beginning rather than a conclusion, this research.
Now, I've heard it said that a child can only form an attachment with one parent. Is that something that you've found in your study?
My study hasn't asked that question or really looked into that, but the study's pretty much based on the assumption that that's not true. I would say a child is far healthier and better off if they have a close attachment to more than one parent and more than one carer as well, so grandparents, child carers, siblings even, can all be really important in creating a secure safety in the way this child grows and feels cared and loved for and understood by other people. So, yes, it may be in many cases that the child has a special connection with one parent that or one carer that is there very consistently and there for them, all the time. But that child is very capable of forming more than one. So, and I think is better off with more than one as well. Mm. Obviously, if you only have one, you've got no backup, have you? And so when someone else, if that one carer is unwell or unavailable, suddenly that child is really left in a very unsafe condition, emotionally anyway.
And I think that it's referred to in your paper that if the attachment is lacking with one parent, but the child has a good attachment with the other parent, that can sort of lessen the damage done from the where there isn't that attachment and that bond between, say, one child and one parent.
There is some really good research out there that can show that, like if you're looking at your typical two-parent family, it really didn't matter which parent and the gender of that parent, which one, as long as this child had one good attachment, one secure attachment, the risks for them were very low, for emotional, social sort of issues later on. So that sort of pointed out that in many cases when we sort of assess a mother and a child, because it's usually a mother that shows up to a service with a child, in that case, when a mother turns up and the attachment isn't healthy, isn't as good as optimal, the question should straight away be asked, who else is caring for this child? Is grandma there? Or, in most cases, is dad around? And dad may be working and not seen as the primary carer, but his closeness of relationship and his trustworthiness in that relationship, his ability to connect and understand this child, can be very protective if something is not ideal with the mother. So in the case maybe where a mother has postnatal depression or is just struggling to connect with the child for any sorts of reasons, if the father's there able to do that, the outcomes for that child are as good as if it was just your regular good mother-child relationship. So I found that really surprising and really encouraging for children's outcomes, because we often get quite, you know, it's quite upsetting and worrying when a mother isn't connecting well with their child. It's really exciting to think, well, if dad can be there and has the capacity, has the opportunity to have that relationship, we're in safer waters.
Yes, I think that is good news. And we're speaking today with Dr. Dawson Cook, who is a clinical psychologist and researcher at Curtin University. We're going to take a short break now, and the song was picked for us by Dawson. Dawson, you've gone for My Father's Eyes by Eric Clapton. Is that a significant song for you?
Yeah, I love Eric Clapton, and I knew he'd written about his children, so when I was thinking of picking a song, I saw this one and thought, how appropriate, because it's Eric Clapton reflecting as he looks into his own son's eyes, reflecting on how his father looked at him. And I think, being a father myself of three children, it has transformed my understanding of what my father offered me and who my father is for me still to this day, my experience of raising my own children. So it sort of draws those intergenerational connections beautifully.
like a bridge that was washed away. My foundations were made of clay. As my soul slides down to die, how could I lose him? What did I try? Bit by bit, I realized that he was here with me. I looked into my father's eyes. My father's eyes. I looked into my father's eyes. My father's eyes. My father's eyes.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And that was My Father's Eyes by Eric Clapton, chosen for us today by our special guest, Dr. Dawson Cook, a clinical psychologist and researcher at Curtin University. So, Dawson, we were just talking about the importance of that early attachment security. What do you think are the factors that contribute to a child's healthy development?
I guess not being a medical or more general health-related person, I'd be mostly able to comment on social and emotional sort of health, so their relationship, future relationships with others, but also I like to say their relationship with themselves. I think that's often a nice way to think of how we have good mental health. So the question, what is it that contributes to that? I think it's critical that the carers, early carers in a child's life, and I'm most interested in the very early years, the parents or carers in those early years provide the base of how a child feels secure, feels safe. Safe sometimes with their own feelings, their own thoughts, but also safe with how they interact with other people. Like when other people come close to them, is that frightening? Is that bothering to them? Or if other people leave them for a while or are distant, does that really upset them? So how parents and carers set up the foundations for that sort of interaction and model that to them is really, really critical. How you or I right now feel in our relationships, I think the foundations of that have happened in even that first year of life.
And then does that stay with you as you, say, as you mature? Will that sound basis, you know, still play a role when you're, say, 40 years old?
Oh, without a doubt. It's also true that many things happen in between. We continue to grow and learn and mature and have experiences that either trouble and set us back or experiences that become healing and helpful for us to develop. But the foundations are often fairly fundamental to how that plays out. I see clients often in my clinical practice now, and not that I go digging for past traumas and problems all the time, but in many cases it becomes obvious that from a very early age they've had a certain way of seeing the world, and a certain way of seeing themselves, and a certain way of interacting with other people. With the clients I see, obviously they've got difficulties when they come to me. The source of those difficulties come from that lens in which they see those things. And that has been, I think, far more than genetics or biology. I think that has been created by the relationships they had in those first early years.
There was an interesting finding related to the difference between father-son relationships and father-daughter relationships. And I think you found that these relationships were more, the father-son was more positively related to the marital satisfaction between the parents.
Well, those sort of findings just open up a can of worms that pose more and more questions rather than answers, unfortunately. I think it really is interesting how we, as parents, relate differently to the gender of their child. And, of course, this is a huge debate here in Australia at the moment with same-sex marriage. And there's challenges in how we do that. and I think it just raises the question, do we treat our sons differently? Are we more connected with our sons or our daughters? The bottom line for me is they both, you know, sons, daughters, regardless of gender, people need close relationships. They need to feel understood, trusted. They need to be, you know, like the song was saying, you know, seen through your father's eyes, you know, or seeing your child through your father's eyes. It's how we see our children that can really change the way we relate to them. And we need to often open our mind, open our eyes to that inner world of our child and connect with that. Be mindful that we might have a bias, we might have maybe a bit of a preference for our son or our daughter. And as parents, we can take responsibility for that and compensate for it and make sure we're giving them all the love we can give.
Are you leaning towards quality time being more important than quantity? Or I guess ideally you want quantity and quality, don't you?
Yeah, that's an age-old debate, isn't it? Is it the quantity that really matters or the quality? It's without a doubt children are going to notice both of those things. They're going to notice how much you're around, you know, whether you're actually showing up and present at times when they need you. But also they're going to notice whether you're really there or whether you've got something else on your mind, you know, whether you're on this smartphone or preoccupied with other issues and trying to multitask, you know, look after them and do things while you're doing something else. So they'll know where your attention is. Yeah, I guess each of us as fathers have quite different circumstances. Some of us are limited in, you know, the amount of time we can spend with our children. So I guess you could argue in those cases when time is difficult to find, you'd really want to be making sure the quality was right up there and you're really intentional about how you're spending that time.
Just an added responsibility, you've referred to what happens going on to the next generation. So do you see that positive upbringing with the mentalizing and the empathy and all those things, can that have an effect going forward into the future?
How I make sense of my own parents, how I reflect back on who my parents were for me, how I connected to them, how they related to me, if I can do that work well, if I can reflect back on that well, that is a really good sign for how I'm going to be as a parent with my children. And that becomes difficult to reflect back if my parents have been difficult for me. You know, if I found that relationship really hard and I haven't had some opportunity since then to heal and find some peace about that. So it does sort of change. It does pass on through the generations if it's not intervened, if someone doesn't intentionally reflect back and make sense of their own story and make those sort of calculated decisions about how they're going to be as a parent with their own child. It's both very challenging, I think, to be a dad at this time because everyone wants to have their cake and eat it too. You know, we have to have a good career and be a great dad. It's a bit of a mirroring of the whole dilemma that women have had of, you know, being great mums and suddenly becoming great in their careers and their vocations as well. It's challenging. I don't know if there's always as much support for men to be good fathers as there might be for women. So it takes a father to be very intentional to stand up and forge their own way in the sort of dad they want to be.
Dawson, we've reached a stage of the show where we ask our guests to pick a song for us. That, of course, can be delegated, but I was just wondering which song you picked for us today.
And it was my daughter, my 20-year-old daughter, that said, "Oh, I heard a good song by Mac DeMarco." And I've never heard of Mac DeMarco, but it's a more contemporary song, and it's called My Old Man.
somewhat familiar, but surely not me.
That was My Old Man by Mac DeMarco, which was the choice of the daughter of our father today, Dr. Dawson Cook, clinical psychologist and researcher at Curtin University. So it just remains for me to thank you very much, Dawson, for being on the program today.
Oh, thank you, Bill. My pleasure.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.